Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? How are you? Are you good? I am good. We have a really kick-ass episode today. I got a super cool email from a listener. I'm going to read it to you because it's optimistic and also very honest at the same time. He wrote, "Longtime listener of Why Didn't They Laugh and Case Closed, Beers Open podcast. Pretty sure I've listened to every Why Didn't They Laugh. In the last couple of years, I think I found you the way many people outside the U.S. did, and that was through Pandora. Very happy to hear your mostly upbeat rants about comedy, philosophy, life, family. I've meaning to write you for some time. Your last Why Don't They Laugh about Chappelle's recent monologue on Saturday Night Live, I finally had the motivation to do it. I honestly have to say that this is your best podcast in some time. You've got back to your essence of finally dissecting the art of comedy, whether it be yours or someone else's. Your insights into even the most minimal phrases demonstrate the depth of understanding that goes into crafting a lengthy career on stage. Your balanced and steady tone." All right, he's being very nice at this point. You know, I don't want to just read all that because I feel like I'm being almost arrogant, but thank you. I don't know. I'm like blushing. But see, this is when it gets honest. All right, he wrote, "I mean this in the nicest way I can. I think you lost some of your gift over the last 6 months, whether it's due to the passion drawn from many recent political happenings in the U.S., the stress of acclimatization to your move across the country, or your reaffirmation of the values you hold dear when it comes to Amy Walter, your career, and your driving forces in life. Your podcast had developed an aggressive tone, devoid of the slow and methodical resolve normally shown to the topics at hand, becoming almost accusatory as you presented your stance from the pulpit rather than drawing us in and guiding us through the numerous twists and turns found in the complexities of the human experience. I'm happy to say I believe you have found your feet once more, and I think your assessment of Chappelle's parting phrases also explains how you present your opinion so well, that he uses a powerful place not to speak down upon us but to stand amongst us and lift us towards greater heights. Thank you for your continued efforts with your podcast. You have a new Patreon and a devoted fan. Cheers from the other side of the world, Australia." See, I love that. I think that that's exactly what drew me to podcasts in the first place, was the gathering of perspectives. I love when you email me, because he had a very interesting perspective of my last 6 months. Because he's not in the United States. And that is so valuable for me to hear. James, if you're listening, I really hope you had told me this 4 months ago. But better late than never. I'm glad that you wrote it to me in a way where you felt you could be optimistic. But see, the thing about being American is in the last 6 months, every single news story, every single one, is somehow related to politics, to this divisive us versus them monkey politic bullshit. And I was going to do a sketch where I'm walking down the street and a few people come up to me and they just start taunting me. You know, one's like, "Hey, you're too tall." I'm like, "Oh, sorry, man. I, you know, whatever." Someone else is like, "You're not funny." I'm like, I didn't even mean to. I didn't. So, okay, thanks. Someone else is like, "You're racist. You're a dickhead. You should die. I hate your mom." You know, and I start responding to these people. I'm like, you know, fuck you. You know, maybe I, you know, and in this sketch, these people are standing in front of me. And then you pan out to the other side of the street and you just see me yelling at nothing. And the whole point of the sketch is that social media, that sometimes you're responding to forces that other people literally don't see because they're not in the same area as you. And so you now just appear insane. And his observations about me are absolutely right, that I am pretty much more drawn to just watching my own comedy and criticizing it or looking at the nuances of human experience and not attacking people. I have rants, but typically they're from a good place. But in the last 6 months, I feel like, you know, I did make a major move in my life. I did reassess a lot. I felt like I almost was going through a breakup with the city of Los Angeles that I still love, kind of. you know? And there's a lot of weird emotions that came from that, where there's a lot of things I wanted to just say now that I could leave. You know, a lot of bitterness. Not bitterness in the way most people would assume. It's not like I wanted more from them and they didn't give it to me. It's that I think the culture was perpetuating a really dark thing in our world. And like, I'll give you an example. About 9 months ago, I went through something pretty jarring. I don't know, during the Super Bowl, Beyonce did a dance where they all held their fists up like the Black Panthers. And at the time, I didn't even understand the symbolism. I just thought it was a great routine. I gave her props on Twitter. I was like, that's awesome. Then a couple of my buddies, a couple of military friends, a couple cops were like, that's really bad. And I'm like, why? They're like, that's a Black Panther salute. That's only going to get more cops messed with on streets. And so I started being like, oh, yeah, that's crazy. Because, you know, the Panthers are were a race-based group, and they pretty much hated white people. And you can say there was cause for it or not. From my perspective, it doesn't matter. And oddly enough, Malcolm X is one of my heroes after he stopped hating white people. Like, the last 6 months of his life, he said some of the most unbelievably profound things, like top 10 philosophical minds of the century. But that was after he stopped hating white people. He started seeing the system as a whole, and how the system would set two groups attacking each other, and how flawed it all is. And that's when he was really mind blowing. Of course, he was shot quickly after. But my point, this is my point. So I did a tweet where I compared the Black Panthers to the Ku Klux Klan, basically saying, this is madness. How are we doing a race-based dance on during the Super Bowl? This is when people should come together. This is divisive. This is comparable to the Ku Klux Klan. I got called a racist probably 10,000 times. It got me on Yahoo, you know, that I'm a racist. Okay, let's break this down. My statement presupposes that I do not like the Ku Klux Klan. My statement is a hyperbolic comparison to a group that, by me saying it, by me criticizing the Panthers in a comparison to the Ku Klux Klan, I am saying I don't like the Ku Klux Klan. Like, I'm saying that they are a bad group. Now, with a lot of soul searching and a lot of evaluating, I realized that I was wrong in the comparison, in that the intention of the groups are very different. Like, the Klan was to subjugate, and the Panthers was because in Oakland at the time, cops weren't protecting the community, so they had to, by any means necessary. I get that, and I did apologize, and people accepted my apology, and I was very thankful they did. But my original point wasn't racist. It was misguided. It was not fully thinking through everything involved. I still think it was a bad move to do during the Super Bowl. I still think it is divisive. And this is what happens, ladies and gentlemen. When you act crazy like that, when you shame someone publicly for an opinion that clearly is not racist, you could call me ignorant. You could call me misinformed. You could call me erratic. But it's not racism. In fact, I was saying the Ku Klux Klan is the worst possible comparison you can be compared to. I was saying race for race. Like, if you're going to show a symbol that is associated with a group of people that do not like another race of people for their race, that is a racist act. Okay. The reaction, some people very close to me in Hollywood said that I shouldn't go on Twitter as much. I had very close Black friends that said they knew where I was coming from. They knew I wasn't racist, but they couldn't publicly defend me. That never really left me, that feeling of feeling alone, where people could really know you, know the real you, know what you meant, know everything. And they just basically say, you know, just back away from this one, Owen. We all know you're not racist, but just take it from these people. And at that point, I realized I wasn't really right. It wasn't a right fit for me anymore. That I went to LA because it's such a free thinking place that, you know, I always viewed it as the place of pirates and misfits and rock stars and actors and people that did drama club and played piano and did band instead of being jocks. And I felt very comfortable with them. And my parents are both liberal college professors who faced a very similar thing. Liberal used to mean open. It used to, when you went to a college campus, you went there to debate with the greatest minds in your country. And debate comes from disagreements. That one person may say the Black Panther salute is a tribute to a group of people that did what had to be done and should be allowed in the public forum. And then my debate side would say, I think that if you're going to say racial pageantry is wrong for white people or for anybody, you have to say it's wrong for everyone or else it's a racist statement in itself. It's basically like all generalizations are false. White people are racist. You know, statements that contradict themselves within themselves. That's a debate. That is something where every side can learn and grow from listening to the other side. What happened to my parents, who now are disillusioned from the liberal side, is it's now not that. Like, if you go to a college campus right now, there is no debate. You can go to Yale and Harvard, and there's no debate. If you say you support Donald Trump, they may kick you out of school. Like, you're ostracized, and that's half the country supports this man. You used to be able to argue anarchy. You could argue polygamy. You could argue anything. Like, transgendered rights came out of the liberal culture of debate. And I agree with that. I agree with rights for gay people, transgendered people, all this stuff. But what happened is it flipped on its head. And then it became a way of subjugating, where you can now have 91 genders and you can now be fired for not saying the right gender. It's almost like the visual light spectrum, where there's red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. If you don't accept certain broad categories, there's an infinite amount of wavelengths. It's kind of like in physics. One of the things you think about is if you go halfway to the wall forever, you'll never reach the wall. And the first instinct is no, eventually you'll reach the wall. No, if you go in half increments, you will never reach the wall. Same thing happened after the Protestant Reformation. They, after Gutenberg had the printing press and Martin Luther had his issues with the Catholic Church, literally anybody that thought they heard God in their head started a church. Because at that point, there's no categories. And a lot of people died. The peasant revolts and shit, hundreds of thousands of people. It was madness. And I think we're kind of going through a little bit of that right now, where you can say you're any gender now. I mean, it's like you can just make one up and then get mad that people don't know it. That isn't liberal. That's a dictatorship. That is oppressive. And so my whole point for this rant, I guess, is James was talking about my more aggressive tone, and that came from threat. Aggression comes from threat. When you feel threatened, they say the hungry dog hunts best or the wounded deer jumps highest. I'm in a career where a threat response isn't good. You know, I've always prided myself on analyzing my jokes after the fact, seeing where I misstepped, and staying rational. Because fear responses always are bad. They always end bad. And I did have that for a while. I felt like my way of life was threatened. And so if I sounded aggressive and I started talking down to people, I apologize. But just understand that from my point of view, someone who is a liberal from the 1960s definition, not the modern definition, like the old school liberal, where like what you believe is what you believe, and I'm not here to tell you differently. But if you try to impede on my ability of expressing thoughts that are not harmful, then I feel threatened, because my whole life, all my income, all my food is paid for by me saying thoughts. And as soon as I have to start second guessing it, I had to leave a city that I loved. I mean, I love LA. I love being around my family more. I love the four seasons of Lake Placid. I love knowing my neighbors. I love when I hear a gunshot, I think someone got a deer and didn't get murdered. But LA, the reason I felt that aggression towards it was because I loved it so much. I loved what it could be and what it, for whatever reason, forgot it was. And so this email really touched me because I could tell by the email he had listened to every one of my podcasts. He knows me. You know, podcast listeners know me. It's a different type of fan. It's an equal. It's not even a fan. And that's why starting this Patreon page has been a blast, because it's the diehards all go there. And the pledges are $1, $3, $5, or $25 a month. And because I know that there's a lot of people having very different experiences with money right now, there's no difference in what you'll get. If you pledge $1 or $25, you get all the content. It's kind of like when I have a lot of money, I tip big. And when I don't, I do the math for 18%. But when I'm rolling, I'll double it sometimes. You know, and I feel like I want to give you guys that option for $12 a year. I mean, think about how little that is. I will give you more podcasting because the benefit it has for me, which is major, is I don't have to follow the Facebook algorithms where I have to write shocking shit or have like a really colorful picture or like a meme that was stolen. That's the shit that they allow people to see. Everything else, they don't really do it. So if you really like this podcast, pledge a monthly thing as low as $1. And you'll see every post. I uploaded a South Park episode 2 days ago that I'm just leaving there. So you can get that. I'm going to upload conversations with my mom and dad. I'm going to upload more personal stuff with me and Amy. Stuff that I don't always feel great throwing out into the ether of the internet. So, and it's a very, ironically, it is a safe space. And I say ironically because it sounds like I'm so anti everything PC stands for. But I just don't like the perversion of diversity. The concept of a safe space is fine with me. If you want to find your safe space, do it. But don't make my space your safe space. And don't make life a safe space because it isn't. And it never will be. Okay, so that's all out of the way. And now we're going to dissect some comedy and no more heavy shit. And I'm on the road a lot right now. This weekend I'm doing Houston Improv. Weekend after St. Louis Helium. Weekend after Pittsburgh Improv. Weekend after Phoenix. Then I go to Seattle to spend Christmas with Amy's family. We all go as a team, as a squad. Then for New Year's, me, Amy, Walter, maybe a dog. We do Fort Myers off the hook. And then back in January to Saranac Lake. And then I go to England for a good chunk of January where I do 10 arena shows with the Impractical Jokers. That's going to be absolute madness. I was going to help promote, and I realized they're all sold out. Like, those guys have absolutely exploded. Best dudes ever. Known them since MySpace. Sweet, sweet human beings. I've gotten more fans from being on their podcast than doing Leno 9 times. I still can't believe how funny that is. I didn't even know what a podcast was when I did it. It was it's called What Say You Podcast, and I didn't even know what it was. I was just like, so we talking to this little thing? And to this day, people constantly write to me, I heard you on What Say You Podcast, I'm a fan now. I'm like, same with Pandora. I did 2 Comedy Central specials. No one gives a fuck. It's all about Pandora and podcasts. Hilarious. All right, so this is something funny that happened. This is in the kind of what James was talking about. This is when not assuming the worst in the crowd pays off. And there's a backstory to this, and you'll laugh. Bear in mind, the guy who, Mike, my buddy who hosted, is only 5'2". So that's why the beginning is kind of awkward. But check this out.
Put your hand together for Owen Benjamin.
Shh. Thank you very much, everybody. How are you? What's going down? All right. It's a big transition. Keep it going for the guys you saw, right? How great are they? Fraz was talking about cracking the code with the vagina.
Yeah, so he does a bit about trying to make a girl come, and it's like, twist it, bop it, rub it. Like, there's a toy he's making fun of. So I thought this would be a fun way to start the show. Check this out. Totally bombs. Listen.
I always felt it was more like Contra, like up, down, left, right. I did that joke 9 years ago, but that's all right. I'm just kidding. He's one of my best friends, but I'm not kidding. I did it 9 years ago. All right, bro, stop looking at my dick. All right, I'll get you guys, I promise. I thought that was going to endear me to the crowd.
All right, so at that point, I just start going with the show. If I was in a darker place, if I was in a more defensive place, if I was a wounded deer, I probably would have just started making fun of the crowd. Like, because I bombed it, you know? And because Faraz is a very close friend of mine, and I used to do a joke about how a quit is like Nintendo. You heard it, where you blow on the cartridge and all that stuff. And obviously, he didn't steal the concept from me. He probably had no idea he even did the joke. You know, it's just parallel thinking. But usually, like, when a guy makes fun of his buddy, who clearly they're friends, you get some, like, laughter and stuff. Okay, so after the show, because the show ended up being a blast. That was pretty much the only bad spot. I found out right before I went on stage, this Asian dude had a seizure, like, in the front row and had to be carried out, and everyone just watched it. And it's so funny because so many times I've like come up to like a dead audience and one of my jokes is like, I feel like you guys just witnessed a rape. And that usually gets a laugh, but on Friday and Saturday nights, I don't go that harsh because, you know, more expensive tickets, but fuller room. But that night it was true. And there was two seizures that weekend. Like, this other dude, this giant Mexican dude, had a full-blown, like full-blown passed out, like, ambulance, like, while Faraz was on stage. So that is a perfect example of not breaking. Okay, this next section is all about babies. And what I want out of you guys is I feel like this is a concept that I could almost write a whole book on. And I want examples from you in your life. Because I have a couple, but this is one of those things where listeners, I think, have better ideas than I do as far as babies being like kings and like dictators and stuff. So listen to this bit and write to me, whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com, if you have any personal experiences like this. Because I don't get to hang out with a lot of dads or moms a lot, you know. But all right, so check this out.
Babies are humbling. They're very humbling. You don't have an ego when you have a baby. They break your ego. It's like the Marines. They just break you apart. You know, like I thought I was all, like I was in charge of my life. And then I realized that my baby is literally like a dick, like a king. You ever see him in a high chair? You ever see a baby in a high chair? It's literally a throne. It's a chair that's above the rest of the table. And he just sits there and somehow he has the best posture when he's in a high chair. And he's just looking at me and my wife and we're just like, what?
Oh, shit, sorry, I hit the wrong button.
Grind up some organic carrots, maybe put a little pineapple in there. I think he likes pineapple. And he's just like... And then we come over and we take the spoon and we put it in his mouth. He's like... And we're like... And we put another one in his mouth. He's like... No! No! Pick it up! And we're like, we should pick this up. And we pick it up, and it's just like, ah!
Oh, shit.
And then we're like, okay, he probably doesn't want anymore. And he's just like, yeah, I want to give it another run.
Okay, guys, want to hear reality? Me doing this recording right now, playing this joke, just woke up my baby. God, I should have turned that down. Huh. I just heard him crying. All right. That's really weird. Because I think he just thought that I was mad. That's really sad. That just bummed me out. Oh, Amy's in there with him. Fuck. All right. So think of some examples for that one. All right. I'll do one more little thing that I wanted to do. Shit, now I feel really bad about it. He's really freaking out right now. I'll just play you a real quick joke. It's not even a joke. This was just me. Fuck. I want to go say hi to Wally Bear. This is the power of honesty. Hang on, what's this?
I'm not against cat people. You don't have to be one or the other. I'm personally not into cats, but I respect the love for cats. You know? I mean, I don't. I was just trying to see a silver lining and I couldn't. No, I do, I guess. I guess some people really, they blossom with like a lot of emotional detachment. Anyway.
So, yeah. So for those of you guys that have been on the full blown with me, I finally am done with my dog joke and I just am going to play it for you guys and then we'll just wrap things up here so I can spend a little time with Amers and the Wall Bear. All right, check this out. This is my full dog joke. Because dogs and cats are a perfect metaphor for politics, for that dress thing that people thought was a different color. It's like just that us and them mentality where no one's right or wrong, but you just can't help but be like, I don't quite get cat people. And cat people are like, dog people are so needy. All right, so this is my dog joke.
Because the problem with humans, and I think we can all agree, we're too smart. Our brains are too big. Like, we overthink our lives. Go on Facebook right now. It's like the world's longest suicide note. Especially since the election. Every person alive is like, I can't even breathe. The sadness selfies. This is me right now. What have we become? And everything's, you know, you open your windows, nothing's happening. It's all in your mind. But the mind's a powerful thing. Perception is reality. So these people really are really sad. And I've been that person. We all have. I've been like not wanting to get out of bed. I'm like, what's the point of getting out of bed? It's really scary out there, you know? And then I open my eyes and my dog's like, I can't believe we're still alive. Because they're just dumb enough to like really appreciate the miracle of life. You know, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, I've been staring at you for hours. I'm so glad you woke up, man. I'm like, why are you so fired up? He's like, I closed my eyes last night because they got so heavy and I thought I'd disappear forever. And guess what? I'm back. And so is my best friend. What are we going to do today? And his tail starts anticipation wagging. Like it's not ready to fully wag because he has been lied to in the past. You know, but he's like excited. He's like, say it, say it. I'm like, what? He's like, you know, man, say it. I'm like, outside. He's like, you promise. And he like, when we go outside, all three of them, they get so proud. Like there's nobody around, but they like walk with really good posture and they're just like, yeah, we're outside. Everyone knows we're outside. This is so insane. And when they see other dogs, I love their reaction because it's passionate. I just like passion. I don't care if people are angry or happy. I just like people to give a shit, you know? Because somewhere along the line, we don't appreciate each other, myself included. I'm not judgy. You ever been in an elevator? You see the doors closing, someone's walking, you're like... like the last thing in the world you want is to share your big space with someone else. Like it's my elevator. I just don't want to be in awkward silence. It's not your elevator. You didn't pay for it. Someone else did, and they're picking your fat ass up like 1,000 feet. So maybe you should wait a second for the old lady that really needs it. But there's something about elevators. We just feel weird in silence. Women don't understand urinals. It's even worse. Take that silence, now put your dick in your hand. Nice. Yeah, he belly laughed on that one. I've been seeking his approval the whole show. He's hard to crack, this one, but I got him with the dick in the hand with the urinal. But anyway, when dogs see another dog, they get excited. They can't believe it. They're like, my dogs will start pulling. I'm like, why are you guys pulling? They're like, there's another dog across the street. We got to go over there and see what's going on. And I'm like, dude, you're strangling yourselves. They're like, rrr. One of them's like, got a boner. He's like, I like this kind of. And, you know, I'm like, all right, we'll go check out across the street. And we go across the street, and the other dog's like, no way! And they're, like, looking at each other like electric, you know. It's like something's going to happen. And then one of them breaks the silence. You know, they're like, so you want to smell my penis? And the other one's like, my brother, I thought you'd never ask. And then they lean in. It's not vulgar. It's actually, they're like pee connoisseurs. They're like smelling fine wine. It's like... And then they look at him like they know something now. They're like, oh, that's your birch tree. I know your work, man. That's some really good real estate decisions you've made out there. And he's like, want to give mine a smell? And he's like, I thought you'd never ask. And I'm watching this, and I'm inspired. I'm like, humans can learn from this. We should be more like that. And that's why I'm facing a lot of legal problems right now.
So that's that. That's the... That's the final dog joke. That joke has taken me years to finish. And I'm finally happy with it. It's good. A lot of trying to figure out that piss thing was... Oh, and just in the spirit of why don't they laugh, I'm going to show you a joke bomb, and we're going to analyze why. I think I figured it out, though, even while I was on stage. But maybe if you guys have any ideas, where is this one? Because Walter fell asleep, which is pretty sweet. I thought I was... There we go.
I like being married. At first, it was daunting, you know, because you develop such a relationship with your penis your whole life, since you're a child, since you're born. You know, no matter what happens, you just grab your wiener, and your wiener's just like, I'm here, you know? And the trade-off is you got to listen to him sometimes, and he makes a lot of bad calls. But it's almost like the internet. It's just like the loudest one gets heard. And my dick's always like, yo! And I'm like, what's going on? It's like, we're going to drive to Barstow right now. And I'm like, all right. It's a bad idea, but we'll do it. And, you know, I listened to my dick for a long time. Every man in this room did. If right now you're looking at your girl like, nah, he's a liar. But that's all right. But because the beauty that happens, though, is my wife settled down that relationship because she was like, you can't listen to that guy anymore unless I'm around. And then totally listen to him. Like, we'll really get it going with that guy. But when I'm not around, he's got, fuck that guy. And I'm like, are you sure? But I'm like, okay. So I just stop. He's like, remember me? Remember fucking, like, random people? And I'm like, bro, I'm changing. And then as time went on, I realized that I didn't need him at all. And I had all this free time. Like, once you really detach from that craziness of your dick, you realize you live like 5 more lifetimes. Because so much of your energy is spent like, am I alone? Like, who is this person? I really like this person. What's going on? Your dick is just messing with you. When you just lock in love and you're like, that's it. I'm like, I'm fucking learning Spanish. Like, I have so much time. This room has had a lot of divorce. Because that's the first time you turned on me for a really good premise. Like, that's a solid joke. And you guys are like, well, if you had told Peter that, like, you have baggage. But it's all right. That's all right. Moving on. It's a funny joke about monogamy. But Spanish is amazing.
Yeah, so that's my hypothesis. I think that there is some tension because Orange County has the highest divorce rate in the country. But it was a great crowd, man, because it was very Hispanic, very Asian, very white. Some black people could have used some more, but, and when I'm listing these races, it's not about the race. It's the culture that comes with it. Like I don't have time on this podcast cause I don't want to just keep dragging by just playing jokes, but like I'll upload my Spanish material to my Patreon page. If you guys want to watch or listen to like all my Spanish jokes to a Hispanic crowd, it's just murder, she wrote. And then if I do it with a white crowd, they act offended. And that is what I felt was a threat. And that's why I felt wounded and a little more aggressive than normal. Because naturally I'm not, you know, I can be fired up, but I didn't really talk much as a kid. My parents thought that I was like, you know, there's something wrong with me. They used to call me their Buddha because I just never made any noise. So like and that's one of the catch-22s about comedy is when you're up there for an hour talking about yourself and then I'm on this podcast talking about myself, it's very easy for people to think that there's a lot of ego and self-centeredness in comedy when in fact the art form couldn't be more opposite. Think about all the cultures and genders and ages and experiences I have to navigate in this writing process. I have to understand women, like what they want, what they go through. I have to understand different cultures. I have to understand the room in that moment. I have to feel the room. Like, what are they happy? Are they angry? Do they want me to go dirty? Do they want clean? You know, do they want me to slow down, speed up? I have to seriously, comics, to be good at comedy and to be able to write a lot, you know, you can be very egocentric in comedy if you just do the same act over and over and over again, or just get into a TV show forever and have other people write for you. But if you're like writing new material all the time and touring all the time, you have to literally disappear and be like, okay, how do I have compassion for a group of people that I don't know at all and have to learn enough about them so that I can mock their life, but still not trigger any of the cultural faux pas where they put me in an out group, you know? Like when I'm making fun of Mexicans when I'm in LA, or when I'm making fun of black people in Cleveland, or Cubans in Miami, or gay dudes in San Fran, or, you know, farmers in Montana. Like there's certain things that they want you to mock them because that's the whole point, but they also don't want you to cross that line. So to understand that, you can't think about yourself at all. You have to think like, what are these people like to the core? And in this journey of mine, I have found so much optimism in the human condition. I've found so much beauty and connectiveness, and how there's more, you have more in common with someone who thinks like you than someone who looks like you, or someone who has, you have more in common with someone who had a similar childhood experience than someone who has the same income as you. And these are things that are true. You have more in common with someone who had the same amount of maternal love that you got than you are of someone with the same country. And these are all really, really beautiful, positive things. And that's one reason where I'm almost like, if I was Michael Jordan's coach and he was quitting basketball in ninth grade, and I'd just be pulling my hair out. Like, don't you people see how good we are? That inside every one of us could be a Nazi. Understand that. But just know, to make people get to that point, you have to break that. They don't want to. That's the underbelly. That's the problem. As much as there's optimism, the negative is we are still very tribal. Where the word kind comes from kin, because instinctively, we're the most kind to our own. And so when you're dealing with a war situation or an economic travesty or just major conflict, and your kin requests something horrible of you, you'll go through a series of justifications and a series of, you know, you might vomit a lot. You might never be able to sleep again. You might become a totally different person. But every person alive is capable of something terrible. And here's an irony for you all, based on, especially, you know, based on James's letter, I just feel very self-exploratory today. The person who goes against the grain, like, for example, like my inability of just saying all black people are heroes, all transgendered people are beautiful. My inability of doing that shows a certain personality trait. Ironically, I'm less likely to be a Nazi if that shit came. If Hitler took power right now, I would be less likely to agree to work at Auschwitz than a lot of these social justice warrior, quote unquote, liberals. Because they're following madness. Like, agreeing to some of these social terms And I paid a price for not doing this. That's a personal trait I have that would also make me rebel against any tyranny. If Adolf Hitler told me to work at Auschwitz, I'm sure it's possible somewhere deep in my soul, but it's less likely that I would than one of these Delta liberal people where it's like they all conform. They all say that there's no difference between men and women, but you have to hire more women because you need diversity. If there's no difference, then diversity doesn't exist. It's a fucking oxymoron. That is an impossible combination. If you say you have to hire black people for a certain job because you need diversity, that means you're claiming now that there are black thoughts and black actions. That's insane. Because you could say culture, you could say there's a black culture, but black culture isn't limited to skin. Eminem is more black than Tiger Woods if you go culture. So now you're talking just skin. That, my friends, is the most racist you can possibly be. When you don't hold one person accountable for a race dance as another person. And I've paid dearly for my inability of backing down from obvious madness. So just know that the people out there that are telling you to believe something you know is bullshit, and you watch as they follow step and they just goose step right along. They're all these tweets, they're goose stepping on Twitter. That's the same personality trait that can be molded into a Nazi. So just know that. And we're not facing Nazis right now. Donald Trump isn't Hitler. I didn't want him as president, but he's no Hitler. He's an opportunist. And I think he may hire some people that are much closer on that spectrum. But I don't think he's an ideologue. I don't think that he has a burning desire to end any race or group. I think he wants to win. I think it's just like Bill Burr's joke that someone made fun of him at a breakfast. Obama made fun of him at a breakfast, so he took his job. I think his ego is astronomical, and I think that's more what we're dealing with than an ideologue. But if people keep goose-stepping through life, if people keep raising at our Ivy League colleges our future senators and congresspeople and Supreme Court justices to think that the world should be a safe space from any idea that contradicts your idea, our next Trump won't be just a silly dickhead. It may be someone to actually fear. And just know I won't go along with it. All right. So sign up for Patreon, patreon.com/WDTL. There's a new Case Closed Beers Open coming out. And we also just did a Patreon for that /Case Closed Beers Open, where you can buy us beers with pledges. And the reason I like Patreon so much is because it makes me feel free. It makes me feel like what James was saying. It's interesting that he noticed that right as I started self-producing, right as the network I was on is now going out of business for this podcast. So I have to figure out how to pay for this shit. And I'm already approaching the amount I need a month to break even and then hopefully make a little so I don't have to go on the road as much. And it's all listener supported. And I find that amazing. It gives me a real sense of freedom. And for someone like me, freedom means being nicer because my actual nature is calm and loving. And I like to see the best in people, but my scared nature can be very aggressive. So for me, like the more I feel like the people around me aren't insane and like my way of life isn't threatened, you will see a lot more positivity from me. And so if you just pledge a buck, listen to the new South Park episode, because I also discuss Scott Adams's book, the creator of Dilbert. It's very interesting. He has a couple flaws that I see, but a lot of really interesting stuff. So much love. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes. That's a great platform for me. I love Apple. The people I know some of them personally, and they're just a very, very cool company. And make sure you comment if you can, because that lets people feel. The number one way someone buys something on Amazon or listens to something online is reviews, you know? I was looking to buy some stuff on Amazon the other day, and if anyone said bad shit about the product, I was like, let's look around. If there's a lot of good stuff, I feel confident to listen. So all of those comments mean a lot. Same with Case Closed, Beers Open. If you could do that, that's awesome. And if you ever want any of the Patreon content and you don't have a dollar, I will email it to you because I don't want anyone left out. But yeah, if you're really like hurting, that's all good. But thanks for listening. And these are, and thanks, James, for the email. That really was a eye-opening and very true email. And I'm glad that you gave me your perspective because you're a very, very, very intelligent and kind person. And the Australian perspective is a good one because you guys fucking punch sharks and shit and drink. All right, much love.